You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Now I have a machine gun.
Ho, ho, ho.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Yes, man, it's got
hands. Make love in the hammock.
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 113 for the 18th of December, 2010, and it's a very festive, merry show. I am David McMahon. I'm joined as usual by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I can't stop staring at freaking
my little pom-pom.
That is the funniest thing I've ever seen. It's like a miniature Christmas hat.
My wife put this together for me. Thank you very much.
Oh, wow. It's like taped on and everything.
It's stuck to my headphones. So it's cool.
That's just, wow. So that's staying there the whole show.
Huh? It's staying there the whole show. Get used to it.
Yeah. All right. I will. Well, hi, everyone. It's good to see you.
And
Merry
why
Christmas.
Am I wearing a little pom-pom on my hat? Because it is December 18th, which means we are 1 week away from Christmas.
Oh, wow, that's very festive of you. Isn't Look, it even pops up on the screen and everything.
Isn't it lovely? And for those who don't celebrate Christmas, we also have the politically correct one as well.
Just in case.
The one that says Happy Holidays, you know. Yeah. So, all right, let's get this show on the road. What do you think?
Let's do a show.
Timers? Have I started a timer? I haven't started a timer. There we go.
There we go. So the timers. We're very organized. A
couple seconds
today.
Off. What the hell? You know what? This is our last show of the year. We're rounding up this show. Year we have 2 weeks off. We come back on January 8th, so you know, we just have a little bit of fun today.
Yeah,
reason, I mean, we could have really started our holidays early, let's face it. Yeah. We started the tech show holiday last week.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
This week we have the third highest geek cred film of the year.
Oh yeah,
if not probably the highest one, but the third one as in chronological order.
Yeah.
Because of course we're going to review Tron Legacy this week, which we had the pleasure of seeing a couple days ago. So before we get started with that, though, what is this show? This is Film Actually. This is the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com. This week we're going to have a look at probably, as I said before, we're doing Tron, but I would say that it's probably the most hyped film event mm-hmm. of the year.
Yep, yep.
They have been promoting this film now since Comic-Con 2008, I want to say. So it has been a long road, and we're finally here, and it's finally come out. So we'll tell
you, a lot of work's been done on this.
Yes, and we'll tell you what we thought of it. We're also going to take a look at a couple of new trailers in our Entertainment Buzz section. We've got a little bit of sad news as well. And, of course, our list of five this year was an easy call because it is the last show of the year, which means dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Our five films of the year. This is where
our five films of the Geek Actually year for anybody that wants to try and pull those last minute cards on us.
This is where we commit.
Mm.
We basically, all throughout the year, we've been saying, I think this is going to be one of those films of the year. Well, this is where we finally commit and say, okay, well, let's put our eggs in the basket and say where we're standing on this.
Yeah.
But before we do any of that, I think we should probably do our review. We do have some details here that I'll bring up. Let me just bring up. I got a little bit of poster art here. We can bring this up too. It's a great poster, by the way. I like the poster.
Yeah.
Before we actually review this film, I thought I was actually going to put together a package with video and all sorts of stuff. And I just didn't have time, unfortunately. But I think it is fair that we really do need to address the original Tron before we go any further. Mm-hmm. And if I'm factually inaccurate at all, please write to me. I'm doing this off the top of my head. Okay, but Tron means a lot to me. So, but let's see. In 1982, I was 14 years old, and I got a little poster, and I think it was Movie Magazine at that time. Mm-hmm. For this film called Tron coming out. And I think at the time it was actually being dubbed as something like the Video Game Warrior or something like that, and all this sort of nonsense. And I thought, this is all very exciting. Now, I lived at the arcades in those days. I was an arcade junkie, right? And the idea of being able to go inside an arcade machine was like hot to me, right? Yeah. And my friends, we got wind that there was a special premiere screening of this film. My friends and I sent off for the tickets. We actually got it. We had these beautiful little cardboard fold-out tickets that had the picture of Tron on the front cover, and we were all so excited. I had that on my wall for years, by the way, that card. Yeah. We went to see it, and we were just absolutely blown away. Now, you got to remember, though, that my friends and I were all little geeks, and we were really, this was kind of like the film for us. Mm. And unfortunately, it was also the year that E.T. came out.
Yeah.
And it turned out that the world didn't want to see video game warriors. The world wanted to see cute little aliens. Mm. And Tron died.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about just dying. We're talking about dead, cremated, ashes scattered, and whatever was left over was then buried. I mean, it was literally slaughtered. And people thought, well, that's it. It's a dog. It's gone. It'll never come back again. However, with the advent of home video and some very loyal people, Tron gathered momentum, and it became a cult phenomenon over time. And throughout the 80s, people always think of Tron as being basically this innovative, groundbreaking, mesmerizing film. And to all of those counts, absolutely true. You look at Tron today, and Tron is actually really dated. I mean, there's no doubt that it is incredibly dated today. The acting in Tron was never particularly great. The story was kind of slim, but it was the visuals that people were going for. And by today's standards, the visuals are kind of slow moving. And this is why Disney's obviously pulled its DVD release and so forth until after this film comes out. However, I think we need to look at Tron as a historical element rather than how it stands up today. And as a historical document, this was the first film that ever put computer graphics into a big screen motion picture event.
Yeah.
In fact, it was so it was so misunderstood as a film that I was reading recently that the Academy Awards actually rejected it for the best visual effects category for 1982, basically saying they cheated.
Yeah,
saying that because they used a computer, they cheated, and it was actually booted from the best special effects category. Yeah. By today's standards, we'd say, how did it cheat? Everything's computer animation. Yeah. You know, they just didn't understand. Nobody understood the film.
Oh, no one understood what it was at that stage.
Nobody understood what it was. They didn't understand what they were seeing. Mm. A lot of people actually think that all of Tron is computer animated. It's not. In fact, they didn't have the technology. Only the vehicles are actually computer animated. The backgrounds are all hand-painted. Mm. The suits with all the glowing lines, one of the greatest effects of the entire film, was literally a backlit animation process. They shot the film in black and white, printed each frame, scraped out the black lines on their suits and literally backlit, and then stop motion one frame at a time, reshot the film.
Yeah,
with
I know.
This back, it's beautiful. I mean, it's just beautiful. Time consuming, expensive. Yeah. And the other thing that I think is very interesting to note, and we'll move on to Tron Legacy, was the fact that a lot of people sit there and say, why the hell did Disney produce this film? It's so un-Disney-like to produce Tron. And to that, I'm going to get controversial, and I'm going to say it's actually not un-Disney-like.
Yeah.
Walt Disney was dead by the time Tron was made, but Walt Disney himself was an innovator. Mm. Walt Disney took chances. Walt Disney loved to push barriers and boundaries. If it was things like his early animations of things like Pinocchio and Snow White and so forth, where he was starting to do things like adding glows to candles, and all these things that nobody had ever done before.
Yeah.
And what a lot of people don't know is that those early animations all bombed.
They
were all financial disasters. Yeah. They only became family classics and huge financial things over time. Mm. It wasn't until Dumbo that he had a massive financial success. Fantasia was an experiment. Everybody thought he was crazy for doing that. So when Tron was actually brought to Disney, they actually thought, in the spirit of Walt, this is something Walt Disney would do.
Yeah.
And this is why they actually took it on, because this is something that Disney, that Walt himself would have actually produced had he been alive. Mm. All right, zoom forward 13 years after Tron, and Jurassic Park brought computer animation mainstream and brought it to the world where we now have CG as we know it today. Mm. Now we zoom forward, what is almost 30 years, and finally some people have decided to do a sequel to Tron, once again, Disney pushing boundaries. And that brings us to now. All right. So let's have a quick look at the stats on this. I hope I didn't bore everybody with my little reminiscence down memory lane.
No, it's always nice to re-remember all of that sort of stuff.
It is interesting to note as well that Steven Lisberger, the guy that actually, he ran Lisberger Studios and actually directed the original Tron, acted as a producer on this new film. So he was still around. But
in more ways than one.
We'll
get to that in just a moment.
All right. So Tron Legacy, directed by Joseph Kosinski. And if I'm not wrong, I think it's actually his first feature film. Is that correct?
I looked him up. I don't remember seeing anything.
I think he's done shorts. He was actually the man who was responsible for all the gamers out there. He did the Mad World Gears of War ad and a bunch
Which
of
is
other
computers. Awesome if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, so he's an ad maker, and this is his first feature. It is written by Edward Kitsis and Adam Horowitz, and I love this part where it says, based on a story by Edward Kitsis, Adam Horowitz, Brian Klugman, and Lee Sternthal. It took a few people to get this one together. Based on original Tron characters created by Steven Lisberger and Bonnie McBird. The film stars Jeff Bridges reprising his role of Flynn from the first film, Garrett Hedlund, Olivia Wilde, Bruce Boxleitner reprising his role as Alan from the first film, Michael Sheen, James Frayne, and Bo Garrett. And I looked her up. Bo Garrett is the siren, by the way. Yeah. It's Jim. Okay, so according to Walt Disney Pictures, this is the synopsis. Sam Flynn, a rebellious 27-year-old, is haunted by the mysterious disappearance of his father, Kevin Flynn, a man once known as the world's leading video game developer. When Sam investigates a strange signal sent from the old Flynn's arcade, a signal that could only have come from his father, he finds himself pulled into a digital world where Kevin has been trapped for 20 years. With the help of the fearless warrior Korra, father and son embark on a life-or-death journey across a cyber universe, a universe created by Kevin himself that has become far more advanced with vehicles, weapons, landscapes, and a ruthless villain who will stop at nothing to prevent their escape. And as I say, that comes directly from Walt Disney, so if it's a little bit full of drama, wank.
Wank's the word you're looking for, Dave.
All right, let's have a quick look at the trailer for Tron. For our listeners, this trailer is nothing new. We've probably played every Tron clip and trailer since this thing started.
Yeah.
But let's have a look at the Tron trailer again just to refresh our memories, and then we'll come back and give you our review.
What do you say? Tomorrow, you and I hit the arcade. First game's on me.
Can we play doubles on the same team?
We're always on the same team.
Good evening. Our lead story, Kevin Flynn, was reported missing. The visionary icon and NCOM CEO skyrocketed to the top of the tech industry. He was last seen at home with his son, Sam, leaving behind an empire and a now orphan little boy.
Sam, I was paged last night. Page came from your dad's office at the arcade.
Alan, you're acting like I'm gonna find him sitting there working.
Where am I?
Your father was the creator.
He never thought he'd see you again.
Dad. Sam. Long time. You have no idea.
The grid. A place of infinite possibility.
It's incredible.
More beautiful than I ever dreamed. And more dangerous than I ever imagined. My creation turned against me.
Kevin Flynn! Where are you now?
What am I supposed to do?
Survive.
We have to get you out of here.
Up there! There's a new world!
Here they come!
Up there! Is our destiny. It is our destiny. All right, Josh, take it away.
Well, look, I, of course, was quite a bit younger when Tron came out.
I don't think you were born, were you?
1982. No, 2 years too young. but when I eventually started to see it, it became part of my youth. I've seen it so many times it's not even funny. The film itself, of course, when we heard there was a second project, was one of those labored loves where it was kind of like I immediately dropped into the category of game films, which was that there's so much that you can fuck up with these films, and there's so much producer's nightmares to wade through before you can even get the concept of a decent film up. So, like you, Dave, by the time we had seen all of the standard reviews kicking around and, you know, the geek reviews kind of being either really heavy-handed or really positive, it was kind of, we both decided to go in with very empty minds and kind of just try.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where, sorry to interrupt, but it's one of those situations where, from a viewer's point of view, you have to lower expectations.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just dooming yourself for disappointment. You know, yeah. It's one of those feelings. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, but no, it's one of those films that we went in and we cleared out our minds and we went in thinking, and this was an important thing, which I think everyone should really do when you go to see this film, is remember that this film initially was a Disney film. This is, you know, sort of late teens to kids to late teens. That was what it was aimed at. Mm. Like, that was the generation going in there. And look, I mean, I think they did a really good job of bringing it to both generations. Like, I feel it sits really well with sort of the kid audience of today, where it doesn't sort of pander to anything. It comes across very, I wouldn't say dark, but it walks a fine line of almost being dark. Like, it's a return to the world, so you expect it to be a bit more sort of full on, and, you know, life to have got a bit more complex, which it has. Is a lot to try and fit into a film like this, because you're trying to, you know, you've got a more advanced world, you've got a whole bunch of new elements you're trying to inject, which won't necessarily stick.
Yep.
You've got a generation of people that are programmers and coders and stuff like this, so you want to make sure that you don't make it too simplistic. Like, it's got such a weight on its shoulders, and, like, straight away, that's why I have so much forgiveness for the film, because, mm-hmm. I mean, like you said when we walked out, there's a lot about this film that there are massive holes in story.
Yeah.
There are plot holes you could just fall in and just never stop falling. But the whole thing was, you kind of knew they were going to try and pack a lot into 2 hours. And look, for its faults, I got to say, man, it was a hell of a ride.
Mm. And that is exactly my thoughts on the film as well. I think when you look at this film, you go, it is derivative, yes. It borrows from a lot of other films. It has plot holes you could drive a bus through, as you said. Absolutely. I mean, we'll do a tack a little bit of spoilers at the end, just to, because there's a couple of things in particular where you sit there and go, I'm wondering about a couple of things.
Yeah.
The 3D was good.
Yeah.
Good, high-level standard. It's not Avatar standard, but it is good, you know? The world is visually dazzling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely... I mean, quite literally, the light cycle...
Yeah.
The light just cycle track
mind
is...
Mind-blowing.
I mean, it is literally... You sit there and sit back afterwards and go, wow, I need a cigarette after that.
Yeah. You know?
It's like, I'm done. You know? Yeah. It's like, no, it is fabulous. I don't think it is a perfect film in any way, shape, or form, but
no,
it is. But I
not.
Think you summed it up. I think the word is perfect. It is an absolute ride,
mm.
And I think that is what you go for. And if you go and just let yourself, if you don't look too hard at it, if you don't delve into those plot points, if you don't delve into the logics of it, and just say, just take me, like a roller coaster, then you're going to have a great time with this film. It is loud. It is rambunctious. It is, you know, it is dazzling. And you just sit there and just get carried along with it. And that's fine, you know?
It's really difficult to kind of, like, because we go on so much about story and how much it is an important mechanic. And look, that would probably be one of the weakest points of this film is its story. Because, look, I mean... I think you and me both were kind of spending most of your time kind of looking at what was going on, looking at just how beautiful everything is, like the amount of time spent on everything that builds this film into a whole package. It's sort of like the story was kind of the element that if you were focusing on that, then I understand why people would think that this film wasn't that great. I mean, we've talked before. You got the soundtrack quite early. I've been listening to the soundtrack for the last couple of days. The soundtrack is a perfect blend of kind of that, you know, sort
Daft
of
Daft Punk have excelled themselves.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And it's like it's that great mix as well, because I mean, you do have that kind of very electronic world, but then you have orchestral sets that are just perfectly balanced with sort of the, you know, electronic edge.
Yeah, and if you've only heard, if you're new to our show and you haven't been listening to what we've been playing at the end credits of, and you've only heard like Derezzed,
yeah,
which is a typical Daft Punk piece, then
you
haven't
heard.
That's like
the shortest track on the entire album.
And I think it features literally for less than 20 seconds in the film. Mm. You know, but the rest of the score is so different to that. It is grand. Yeah. And as we said in many shows past, Daft Punk actually worked with an 80-piece orchestra to compose it. Daft Punk has been working with Kaczynski since the very early stages of the script. They basically asked to be part of this.
Yeah.
So the score has actually been growing with the film, and it's integrated into the film in such a way that even some of the sound effects are part of the soundtrack. Yeah. Their score is exceptional. It's actually the most amazing, I think, marriage of music and image I've seen in quite some time. Until, say some of John Williams' early 80s stuff, which was a real marriage as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was their score is amazing and well worth the money. Go buy it on iTunes
absolutely
now.
Yeah.
But don't wait.
Like, it's one of those things where it's like when you combine that plus the visual sort of, you know, sort of beauty of the film plus the great, like, all of the game sections that you have in the film, all of the light cycle rides and so on and so forth, all of the mechanics where a lot of stuff is happening is all really good. It's got a mild edge of humor, which is just really nice. And, I mean, to me, and again, this is me as a fanboy of the thing, really digging deep to try and find things that I like. So I understand if people disagree with me on this, but there's a great sense, especially from Jeff Bridges, that there's this kind of retro futuristic kind of a look at technology and sort of that kind of far out, look what we've accomplished kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's a really, it's really nice to kind of see that talk about balance.
And once
in the world,
there's also, it's an interesting moment because he's been trapped in there so long. He seems like this almost godlike messiah figure, yet he really doesn't know anything about the outside world. They talk about Wi-Fi at one point and he goes, "What's that?"
Yeah, exactly. You know? it's interesting to kind of have those little sort of geek jokes that they throw in there, but also just like moments, like there's a speech at one point where he's talking about the concept of the fact that technology is kind of, there's technology that we are doing to try and help people and organize, and there's technology that's just going out of control for no reason. And like, as geeks, we really understand that, because there is a lot of tech out there that's just completely wasted and completely useless, and yet people will continue to go out and buy them. And it's like, it's just really interesting. Like, there is a lot of depth in it and a lot of love behind the cameras, and I think that's what we really attach to. As geeks and as fans of the film, it's sort of like you just go in and you're just like, wow, you guys just really excelled here. And
now,
really,
we've had a question in our chat room from Callison, who says, how did young Jeff Bridges look?
All right.
Let's talk about the mechanics of this a little bit and say that the young Jeff Bridges is a mixed bag. He, when he's not talking, it is exceptional. I mean, the texture mapping on it, the lighting on it, it's perfect in every way.
Yeah.
When he talks, it's about a 50-50 mix. Sometimes it works exceptionally well.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of scenes where he looks a little bit Thunderbirdish.
Yeah.
And there are a couple scenes where it just looks cartoony.
His neck kind of doesn't sit right in a lot of scenes.
Interesting is that a lot of talk has been made about the Jeff Bridges head replacement and the youngifying. This is not the first time we've done this. And this is a lot of it. Tron can't take credit for this technology because David Fincher did this with The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. And he did it better.
Yeah.
Curious Case of Benjamin Button, the head replacement on Brad Pitt to make him older was phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, quite frankly, some of the most amazing stuff I've ever seen, because that was a complete digital head. And that works. Mm. The Jeff Bridges thing, it's, as I say, it's a 50-50 mix. Now, here is the kicker, though. The Clue character is a major character, and he is in a great deal of the film, which is unlike Benjamin Button, where he only shows up here, yeah. there, and scattered, and then he gets older, and they can replace it with makeup and stuff like that. So they had a much harder job.
Well, look, I want to go as far as to say that they did a really ballsy effort to just basically digitize an entire character. Like, I mean, like, we've seen Avatar where you replace entire worlds and scenes and stuff like that, but to try and kind of give a real person a digital makeover and try and bring it as a main character, I think for that they deserve a lot.
Look, they get a lot of geek points in my book for trying stuff. Mm. I think that they attempted, they bit off a whole lot and they chewed really, really hard. Some of it didn't go down, but they did a good job, you know.
Yeah, I mean it's tough to kind of review because I mean there is a part of me that the more I think about it, the more I go, yeah, look, I mean there were a lot of faults in the film, and so as a reviewer I would definitely say, look, it's flawed. But I mean, like, if you have a love for anything of this kind of thing, and one thing that I said to you when we left was, this is proof to me that we can make a game concept work as a movie. It's there.
And I think it's funny, we had this conversation last night where we said, it's funny, the two most successful video game movies are not based on video games.
Exactly.
Which was Scott Pilgrim and this one.
Yeah.
These prove that you can make a video game movie. Now we just need to make a video game movie based on a video game that works.
Exactly. It's kind of like, to bring those people into that world is very difficult because it's kind of like, we've said it before, games are a difficult sell. Like, each person's, experience of the game is very different. And so there's never a line where you can basically say that's how everyone experienced the game. I wish people would stop trying to create that and try and just create maybe their experience of the game. And just like that, that's how we want it. Just epic scales, things like this. You can sell that kind of a concept to people if you work hard at it. But again...
Okay, we're going to give our summary on this, and then we're going to go into a slight spoiler section. Now, we're not going to go into a spoiler section which actually gives away endings or anything like that, so we're not doing that. Just a couple of specific things, in particular a couple of things that kind of irked me a little bit, or these are the moments where you sit there and go, okay, there's a plot hole. Now we can drive a bus through that one. But before we do that, I think it is also fair at this point that we should also bring in the civilian perspective.
Yeah.
Now, we actually had a talk before the show started today, and we were actually saying, and I said, that there is part of me that is a little concerned that we might be facing 1982 again. Because no matter how much we liked Tron, and we did, we liked Tron a lot, we also, as geeks, really like Scott Pilgrim. And Josh was a bit iffier on it than me, but I quite liked Watchmen. You know, I thought Watchmen was an excellent film for what it was. You know, I don't, you know, adaptations aside and blah, blah, we're good into it. That's another show altogether. But the point is that these were like films with high, high geek credential, and they all died at the box office. I mean, quite frankly, they all bombed big time. And I said to Josh, it seems to me that the geek dollar alone, it means you get a box office of about $30 million, $40 million. You need the general public. If you don't get the general public involved, the film will just fall on its butt. Now, Tron Legacy, for those who don't know, cost above $200 million to make, and Disney has literally banked the farm on this thing. They have I think it's close to like $200 million in advertising on this thing over the course of 2 years. So they're gonna have to make like $400-450 million to make profit. So they need the GP on this.
Yeah.
Now my lovely wife Katie came with us and, you know, she's heavily geek influenced, but she's still GP. She didn't like it. Mm. All right. So then I thought it would be fair to bring up the fact some of her points were she felt that it was A, too loud. That's a subjective. She remember she's into quiet folk music, so I'm sure the Daft Punk score alone probably drove her crazy. But she said it looked pretty, but she just felt that the references to Star Wars in particular were way too high. She just felt it was completely unoriginal. And she said that she felt the characters and the world was cold. She didn't connect with it at all. And she really didn't like it. And you just went down and talked to her, and you saw her expression when you asked her about it. So I just look at that and go, okay, so from a GP's point of view, there might be a problem.
Mm.
So it'll be very interesting to see how this is going to play out.
I definitely can't wait until we come back in the new year and actually get time to kind of, you know,
have a look at its figures.
Really see what this film does.
We will know. I think last analyst report I actually read said that Tron needs to show that it's got a healthy life to it, needs to show 50 to 60 million in its first weekend. So by Monday, Tuesday, we'll have actuals in and we'll know what sort of money this thing is going to make. So I think it's going to be very interesting. All right, but that's the civilians' point of view on this, not the geeks' point of view. I'm going to say from my point of view, I actually really enjoyed this film.
Yeah.
I thought this was a great ride.
Yeah.
I understand what people say about, you know, its story is a bit thin. I understand what people say about the lead actor being a little bit flat, but I don't care. You know, it's one of those films where you sit there and go, I don't care that it's got plot holes. I don't care that it's got... It was fun, you know? I don't think it will stand the test of time like Tron, purely because Tron was so innovative and so groundbreaking at its time, and it was so new. I don't think Tron really brings anything to the table that is so earth-shatteringly new.
It's not like your standard kind of sequel complex where it's kind of a few years after and you're kind of using on sort of similar technology and so on and so forth. Tron stands alone because it was kind of such a vision of its time. Like, we look at it now and we can go, some of these things are just standard reality now. And we've seen games that can do this sort of thing and you can really get dragged into a world like you, like Tron was really saying and so on and so forth. And I can kind of understand that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Tron had cult film written all over it.
Exactly.
Tron Legacy doesn't.
Exactly. Tron Legacy is kind of like if a rich person tries to do the same thing that, you know, someone did on a low budget kind of a feel, you know what I mean? Where it's kind of like they give you kind of rich man sort of thing. And they're like, yeah, that was the expensive version. You know, like these guys really tried. And it's sort of, there's so much soul in Tron. Like you said, you can almost feel like them cutting out every image.
You can
image.
Feel you can, the blood, sweat,
can,
and tears.
Exactly. You can feel the amount of passion and power that went into this. And there is that much in this new one. It's just, it doesn't feel clear cut.
It's like the difference between a hand-carved, beautiful piece of oak furniture.
Yeah.
And an IKEA bookshelf.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they had to make everything in Tron from scratch. Yeah. Nothing existed. You know what I mean? They had to figure out how to do everything.
Yeah.
The computer graphics, even to the computer graphics, were literally, they talk about it in the making of Tron on the DVD that was released a while ago. They literally had to hand code on paper every shot they wanted to do in XYZ coordinates. Hand it over to a computer company who would work weeks on it, send it back to them, and they wouldn't know if it would work until it came back to them. Because they couldn't, there was no visual tools to do any of this, you know? So everything was like trying to learn from scratch on how to do all this. Everything's hand-painted. Whereas Tron Legacy, we have the tools.
Yeah.
There isn't a new tool here. We've used all these tools before. It's just how they've put it together, you know?
Exactly.
It's like what Peter Jackson summed it up really well with Lord of the Rings. He actually said, we didn't innovate anything with Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
We used everybody's technology. We just did it better.
Yeah.
I mean, that was basically his concept was, you know, we weren't innovating something new. We were just taking everything we had already done and made it better, you know? And that's kind of what Tron's like, Tron Legacy. Whereas Tron is just this labor of love, and you can feel it in every frame that comes along. Anyway, so, yeah, I think, quite frankly, I do think Tron Legacy is a great Christmas film. I think it is one that you take your kids to. You put the 3D glasses on, you shovel popcorn into your mouth, and just go for the ride.
Yeah.
Be aware that it is very loud. Katie is right, but that's part of the joy of it, is you just get immersed in this experience. So, yes. Not one of my films of the year, let me just tell you. But a good, fun film anyway. Josh?
Same thing here, man. Look, it's a ride. It's fun. If you haven't seen the original Tron, I reckon it will leave you a bit cold. Because the reality of it is, a lot of it is really nice to see. There are a lot of points in this film that kind of really require you to have some background knowledge, like the very fact of sort of Jeff Bridges' character and who he was and what he represented at the time, and him coming back and playing, not only playing the character, but really playing himself at that time, you know.
Yeah, he
and
was still stuck in 1985 when he disappeared. Yeah.
Exactly, and sort of really, really capturing that is really beautiful. Having small little winks to the camera, like the old director behind the counter in the bar, is really beautiful.
And the line, "That's a big door,"
and that's a big door. Yeah, exactly. And it was actually interesting because I'm someone that may eventually end up on this show. I actually walked up and asked him. I said, "Hey, man," he's someone that works at work. I actually said, "Hey, man, what do you think?" And one of his first comments was the fact that he actually saw the door, and as it came open, he went, That's a really big door. And it opened, and he turned to his girlfriend. He was like, oh, that's you don't really care, do you? No.
As soon as he, for me, as soon as he put the little code key and he started to crack the door, I went, here it comes.
I just love that. Like, that moment, though, was just such a true moment where it was just like, oh, you don't care at all. Yeah. It's just that is exactly how it would be for anyone you dragged along with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also like to point out that I think Disney misstepped. Yeah. Because I don't think the sale of the Blu-ray of Tron would have hurt this film.
No, because I think it would have done nothing but those people that haven't seen it.
Raise awareness.
Exactly. It would have raised
awareness. My son, 11 years old, watched Tron last week because he wanted to watch Tron before watching Tron Legacy. He watched Tron. He loved it.
Yeah.
He absolutely loved it. And in fact, he loved it so much that he went and immediately animated a short Lego movie in the theme of Tron. So I think we'll play that right now. Okay, sure. So I do apologize for our audio listeners that there are passages of silence in this. If you want to watch this movie, there are visuals going on to those passages of silence. He has it up on his YouTube channel now. So go to youtube.com/NickyMcVeigh or go to geekactually.com. I'll have it embedded by this afternoon. Okay, but here you go. This is Nicky's latest animated epic called Sucked Into a Video Game.
Wow, this video game is so awesome. I wonder how it'd be like inside a video game. Where am I? Dad, is that you?
No, I am your dad's computer program. My name is Geek Guy.
Ha 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 ha, your next programs.
Well, actually, I'm not a... No, Geeka, you monster! I challenge you to a disc battle.
Ha 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 ha, fine, meet me at the arena in 5 minutes. Are you ready to be derezzed, program?
No, I'm not. Because I'm not going to get derezzed. You are. Geek Guy, I thought you got derezzed.
I did, but it turns out I had a backup copy of myself.
Great, just have one question. How do I get back to the real world?
Just press your blue button. Yours is the only one that can do that.
Okay. Thanks for everything, Geek Guy.
No problem.
Wow. That was awesome.
And there you go. There is Nicholas's latest little opus of his Tron-inspired film. He was really working hard to get that out before this show today. So there you go. Best button ever, says Joe the Giraffe. Absolutely.
That was cute.
All right. So now that we've had all of that, let's just talk a little, couple of spoilers here. We're not going to give away anything that kind of spoils storyline or anything like that. We just want to talk about a couple of, you know, we've talked about these plot holes and inspirations from other films. So I thought maybe it'd just be worthwhile just to kind of give this notion. So if you don't want to hear this right now, I'm going to put the clock up on screen for our live listeners. Where's our digital clock? There it is. Okay, so according to our live clock, it's 1:23. We're only going to do this for like 3 minutes, really, really quickly. So just keep your eye on that. When it says 1:26, we're done. Okay, audio listeners, go ahead about 3 minutes or so. Mm. All right, first, I'm going to jump in there and I'm going to say spoilers right now. First of all, one gaping plot hole is the fact that in the original Tron, we established that he's digitized, right? Yep. So he shows up because they have those pools of liquid energy and he drinks those like everybody else.
Yeah.
In the new Tron, they've decided that he's still flesh and blood. When he's in the light, when he's in the disc jewel at the beginning, he bleeds, right? Yeah. And so you go, okay, so he is flesh and blood. So when he meets with his father, they sit down and they have dinner. They're flesh and blood. And he has this giant pig on the table, like it's a roast pig, right? Mm. And you sit there and go... Where are they getting food from?
Does he eat, though? Because I only ever remember him drinking the blue liquid.
Also, it could just be a visual...
Well, yeah, exactly. I'm not quite sure, because when I was thinking about that, I'm like, I don't actually remember them ever eating. Now, I may be wrong. I've only seen the film once, yeah. So I'm not sure. But my main thing was the blue liquid in the cup, and I was like, right, blue liquid in the cup.
But they are flesh and blood, so wouldn't their bodies need some sort of... Anyway, that's what I'm saying. Okay.
We don't know if it's maybe an upgrade, and this is the thing I'm going to keep coming back to. Every
it's an
time,
upgrade.
Hey, you know that next point you're about to raise? Upgrade.
Now, my lovely wife, Katie, was the one who immediately jumped on a couple of things. She goes, my God, it's Star Wars.
Yeah.
We have them running through the hangar of what looks like the Death Star at one point, sneaking behind boxes, just like in Star Wars. We have him do the Jedi mind trick on that one program
where he changes the thing in
there. Yeah, yeah.
And they whacks him on the head, though.
It whacks him on, yeah, that's the added thing, you know.
Yeah.
So there's all these little moments. As she said, when the ship takes off to fly, the wings fold down like one of the Tiberian shuttles, you know. But that wouldn't have been a thing in itself, but we'd already had this huge build-up with all the troops lined up on the deck, and you know.
Yeah, actually, that's one thing that I have to say. It's a really weird voice style that Jeff Bridges' second character is using, like Clue. It at times really irritated me because it sounded really fake. Like, it was almost like he was trying to really get across a kind of straight-laced kind of a person. But
Merry Christmas, Rogueshire. He's got to go.
All right, see you, Rogueshire. That really didn't sit right with me. A lot of the scenes with Clue doing big speeches and stuff like that left me really cold.
And we'll just throw in one more. The one thing they didn't nail with the Clue character was after watching Tron...
Update.
Watching Tron only a week before, they youngified his exterior.
Yeah.
But Jeff Bridges' voice has changed dramatically as he's gotten older. He had a much higher voice. Yeah. So Clue still had old man Jeff Bridges' voice.
I actually thought he was trying to do that. I felt like he was trying to do a young Jeff Bridges' voice, which is why I think it failed, because old Jeff Bridges had a really kind of like... He would mutter a lot, and he would kind of like... He'd be very... his words would come out very husky, whereas the young, he was trying to almost yell at everything.
Yeah, it didn't sit.
No.
It didn't work. The young Jeff Bridges actually sounds very different.
Mm.
And those are just a couple of the minor plot holes that you could, there's a couple more, but they're going to get into end of territory spoilers. Mm. So, but there are a couple of moments where you just sit there and go, anyway, we'll end spoilers there unless there's anyone you want to add.
No, that's it, man.
Okay. I just thought those were a couple of the wonderful plot holes that we could bring up. Let's drop that clock off and basically say that overall, though, look, Tron is a good ride. Go see it.
Absolutely. Okay?
And if you want to see Nicholas's film, once again, remember, it's at youtube.com/NickyMcVeigh, or it will embed it on the site at geekactually.com later today. He's already put it up. All right, we're going to move on into some film news because we have a sad one. They're dropping like flies, man, I tell you. We have a sad one, which is Blake Edwards, the director of the original Pink Panther movies and so forth, and many others, The Party. I mean, he's got an esteemed comedy career. Died at 88 this week due to complications due to pneumonia.
Yeah.
So he will be missed. And once again, we don't do obituaries for everybody, but those who have had a significant impact in
this
cinema.
This is the man that brought people the
Inspector
Breakfast
Clouseau.
Club.
Not the Breakfast Club.
Breakfast at Tiffany's. Sorry.
Breakfast at Tiffany's, thank you,
The man is a legend, and he had a really good sense of humor, and he was a really fun guy, by all accounts. Every special features I've ever seen of him, or people talking about him, there's always been a lot of positive.
And quite
things.
Frankly, The Party is one of the funniest films I've ever seen in my life. Bertie Num Nums. Blake Edwards will be missed. He also did Victor Victoria, which is a terrific fun film, also has the esteem of being the only film where Julie Andrews bared her breasts. He could get them to do anything, I swear. The man could get people to do anything. He will be missed. And it's very sad. We also have a trailer for Thor. Now, I'm going to throw this up. This is a week old. Now, this is so frustrating.
I still haven't watched this because when your 10-year-old son says it was meh, I don't really feel the need to watch it. So
what's so frustrating about this trailer is the fact that we did the show last week, and then the trailer showed up online literally hours yeah. after we finished the show. And it's like, you bastards. I would have put this on last week's show had it come out a little bit early. Anyway, so this is last week's trailer for Thor. Have a look at this. For those who have seen all the Comic-Con footage recently...
You're not getting much new.
You're not getting anything new, except for a few visual effects sequences. Mm. But what they've done is they've tightened it all up into trailer length and tightness now. So have a look at this. See what you think. This is Marvel Comics' Thor.
It's not easy to do what you did. You made my men look like a bunch of minimum wage mall cops. That's hurtful. Would you like to tell me where you received your training? Afghanistan? Chechnya? Who are you?
I have sacrificed much to achieve peace. For through your arrogance and stupidity, you have opened these peaceful realms and innocent lives to the horror and devastation of war.
You are a vain, greedy, cruel boy. And you are an old man and a fool!
You're unworthy!
Father.
I now take from you your power! And I cast you out!
Please, open your eyes.
Oh no, this is Earth, isn't it?
Where did it come from?
Your ancestors called it magic. And you call it science. I come from a place where they're one and the same.
He has disobeyed his king. His fate is in his own hands now.
I will end this.
Conversion. Alert, alert, alert.
Forget that. You know what? I have to say, just off the top of my head, I'm sorry, but no matter how many times you try and play it a different way, Thor's hammer still looks stupid. Okay? It always has and it always will. It's a tiny little hammer, only slightly larger than his hand, and no matter how heavy it apparently is, it still looks tiny and like it couldn't do any damage. So there you go.
Fair enough, but I think Thor has bigger problems than that, Josh. Yeah. Because this week, the council, and I'm going to use these quotes, hold on, air quotes, the Council of Conservative Citizens, in other words, the Nazis, okay, and I'm quite mean that quite literally, they're the white supremacists, basically have now issued a decision that they are going to boycott Thor when it comes out, because the character of Heimdall, which you see in the trailer, the guy in the gold helmet, the black guy, they're basically saying, how dare they make him black? He's supposed to be white. They're Nordic. They're all supposed to be Nordic and white, and how dare they make him black?
Maybe he's an import.
An import, I love that. Now, according to this, the actor who plays it, who's in one of your favorites, Idris Elba, I think his name is, or Idris Elba, has basically come out saying, dudes, get over it. Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's like, what the hell? But according to the council, its exact quote is, the American people and government should remain European in their composition and character.
Yeah, like anything.
Zeke Hale! Anyway, so all I can say is, if you see boycotts outside of Thor, those are not the people you want to associate with. All right?
By the way, if anybody's wondering who that black guy is that they're talking about, he is Stringer Bell from The Wire, and he is also the awesomeness that is Luther, if you guys haven't seen that series.
He's also in The Road, isn't he?
He was Losers.
Losers, that's the one I'm thinking of, Losers.
And 28 Weeks Later he was in as well.
Yeah. No, he's a terrific. He's a terrific actor.
He's amazing.
And I have no problem with them making Heimdall black. I have no issues with that.
I think here at Geek Actually, we are saying we're going to boycott the
Council of Concerned Citizens.
So, yeah, we can throw boycotts around too.
Look, I have bigger issues with the 3D than the casting.
Exactly.
Now, speaking of, I also believe a 3D conversion, I could be wrong about that, and let's also speak of a film that really had no purpose in ever being made, really.
Yeah.
This is also came out this week, which is the trailer for Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides, or in other words, Pirates of the Caribbean 4. Yes, they have in fact made a fourth Pirates of the Caribbean, and that the first trailer came out for it. Now, I will say one thing about this trailer. It actually kind of doesn't capture the flavor of the first Pirates film. So
yeah.
In that sense, I think, okay, it's not going to be completely unbearable. And it is going off on a different tangent, and it doesn't have Keira Knightley or Will, whatever. What's his name?
Orlando Bloom.
Doesn't have either of those characters. This is a Jack Sparrow adventure.
Yeah.
And one last thing is it has Ian McShane playing Blackbeard. Now, that's got to be a plus in One Direction. So let's have a look at this trailer. It's the first teaser, actually. So have a look and see what you think.
Death lies before us as we sail to the Fountain of Youth.
You could guide an expedition.
You are Jack Sparrow.
There should be a captain in there somewhere. I hear a rumor. Jack Sparrow's in London. Hell-bent to find the Fountain of Youth.
Don't be a fool, Jackie. The Fountain will test you.
Was that really necessary?
Gentlemen, the Fountain is the prize. Mermaid waters, that could be our path.
Steady as she goes.
What's your play, Jack?
I thought I should give you a warning. We're taking the ship.
It's nothing personal.
Sparrow, ven aquí o te arranco la cabeza.
You might better off. You just... Stay out of it.
There'll be dangers along the way. Firstly, mermaids. Zombies. Blackbeard. The pirate all pirates fear.
If I do not make it to the Fountain, neither will you. Is that it?
I think so.
It has begun again! Are we not king's men?
How is it we can never meet without you pointing something at me?
There's the Jack I know.
Feeling you get when you're standing in a high place, sudden urge to jump. I don't have it.
Did everyone see that? Because I will not be doing it again.
My God, I love that music.
Look, I have to say the only problem I have with that is literally Penelope Cruz. Apart from that, I like everything else about that entire thing. It's like that to me is more like one.
Absolutely, and that's what I'm hoping for. Mm. Look, I'm with Joe the Giraffe in our chat room, which is I quite like the Pirates films.
So, yeah.
You know, even the third one, which had all its faults, still had Jack Sparrow. It still had the Keith Richards cameo.
There was enough in 2 and 3 to keep me going, but I felt very Matrix trilogy-ish about it, where I was just like, oh, I have no idea what I saw. I just saw visual.
Yeah, and there's that one sequence in part 3 which has got the maelstrom and the two ships fighting each other going around the room. I mean, it's just visually amazing to look at, you know? And all that sort of stuff. But the first Pirates of the Caribbean was so much fun.
Exactly.
I remember going to the cinema. I saw an advanced screening of it. All I knew was, I thought, they've made a film of a ride.
Yeah.
That's all we really knew. And I thought, this is going to suck, and I was glad I wasn't paying for it.
Yeah.
And I remember walking out of that cinema so hyped up,
yeah,
humming the pirate theme in my head, you know, going, what have I just seen, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I just love the first one. And the second two are fine. I have no problem. I own them on DVD and I watched them quite a lot. Mm. And, you know, and there's great moments in all of them. This one looks like it could be a return to the form of the first one. It looks like it's gotten away from that storyline.
Well, it's focusing back on Jack.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And I mean, that really is what we've wanted ever since then. It's like the story deviated to the main characters, technically the main characters of the storyline, which, to be honest, was the biggest problem I had with the film.
Hmm. Best characters in the original film were the Jeffrey Rush character and the Jack Sparrow character. Absolutely. Bring those two back, jettison the rest, and go
And
on.
Look, I have to say, I'm in. Like, I mean, I'm in.
Also, Rob Marshall, the change director. Rob Marshall's a good director. I mean, Chicago was fabulous, absolutely, you know? So let's see what he does with it.
He knows how to do big spectacles, and he knows how to get laughs, and, you know, like, that's enough for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in. I'll have a look. Callison has pointed out that they've now made 4 movies from one ride.
Yes.
So we should definitely say that. Now, I would also like to bring up one last little piece of news really quickly. We're not going to go into great detail over this. I just want to say that I'm very proud of Warner Brothers at the moment because they are actually looking at piracy from a new point of view. So rather than immediately go, oh, all piracy are bad, let's sue everybody in sight, they're actually starting to look at the numbers. And they're now saying that when they hand in sales reports for films, they're actually handing in the torrent reports as well.
Yeah.
They're looking at what is being pirated. They're looking at what the trends are so that they can use that in marketing to find new ways of doing things.
Exactly.
And like, I think,
if you go in and you pick the films that are really, really kind of like people are just going to go out and take instead of actually buying on DVD or something like that, maybe you need to lower the price on them to $5 a piece.
Yeah.
And maybe see what happens. Maybe you might see
day and date releases,
people.
Guys.
Exactly.
Know?
So
Warner Brothers is forward thinking on this. It doesn't mean that they're going to immediately make all these changes, but it means that they're actually looking at it. Dude. Warner Brothers also has this new incentive, which is brilliant, called the Warner Archive. Have you seen this?
No.
This is not an ad, by the way. They're not sponsoring us, but I just think it's such a great idea. Warner's has opened up the doors to their archives, hundreds of films that have never been on DVD because, quite frankly, there's not a huge market for them, right? What they've done is they now make it as a burn on demand. So you order the film, they make the disc and send it to you.
That's awesome.
And I think, why aren't other companies doing that? We could have full archives of everything, you know? Brilliant stuff, you know?
It's a great idea.
So I say, Warner Brothers, hats off to you. This is the first step in the right direction against the fight against piracy. Rather than just sue everybody, let's find a new way of doing things.
Yeah.
That's it for news.
Right.
That brings us to the moment, Josh. The moment. Dun, 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 dun. List of five. Yep. This week, our list of five. Final list of five of the year. Our five films of the year. And I'm going to just shoot over to my notes here. So that
You have no idea how much trouble and like intense amount of thinking this has caused me.
Oh, I do. Yeah. I was up late last night because
I've been like researching the start of the year and like trying to figure out what I've seen this year. I mean, my list didn't really change, but it was just interesting to try and go over it. And that's why my list is actually about 14 films.
Yeah. Well, I'll put it this way. I've got five films. I did narrow it down to five films. I'm still not entirely convinced about my number five, but I'm going with it.
Yeah.
I do have 4 honorary mentions. Now, I will stress, Josh and I have actually disagreed on something.
Yeah.
And that's fine because, once again, the lists are individual.
Yes.
But I made it a pact because we have an international audience. I've made a pact with myself that my list would only include films that were released in 2010.
I actually haven't deviated from that.
Okay.
So,
Because Australia does have a weird releasing schedule, and there are films that I've put into honorary mention because I couldn't, in my good conscience, put them into the top five because they're technically 2009 films that we got late.
Yep.
So I actually kept it to 2010 only. It sucks, quite frankly. And I'll mention some of those titles off as we go through the list. But for the purpose of this list, all my films were released in their country of origin in 2010.
Cool.
Okay? And I think they're all from America anyway, so that's released in America. All right, Josh, kick us off.
All right, number five on my list is one that I didn't actually think would hit five, but considering the other films on my list and also, God, it was such a hard one, man, because I chose the five because they're the five that really are my top picks of the year. But there are so many films that kind of almost knock it off, and it's only due to a personal preference that the list is probably going to be what people are going to expect. My honorable mentions are the films that I really wanted to stick into that list, but I felt the five really had to be this generic. Like, it had to be these really big ones. Number five is Kick-Ass. Look, Kick-Ass came out, and it did exactly what it was supposed to. It was a freaking awesome ride. I've never laughed so hard in a film. I've never screamed fuck yeah at a cinema screen before. It's a good ride. It plays both the cards of why you shouldn't just run out and try and be a superhero, and also the ride of kind of what it would be like to be a superhero in one film, which I didn't think was actually possible. And way to bring the spirit of comics to the big screen.
Damn straight, and I will just follow that up by saying my number five is Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
Well, I also have an alternate list that I'm going to run here as well, which are five films that were either huge disappointments or just general pieces of crap. And my number five on that list would be Alice in Wonderland.
So wait, we're doing that list as well?
I'm just running them simultaneously. I've got them backed up on the same list.
All right. Well, look, I'll do mine afterwards.
So, you can do yours afterwards. In fact, I'll do mine afterwards either as well. So yeah, but my number five is Kick-Ass as well. That is actually the one I was debating over a lot. I took it out of the list. I put it back into the list. I took it out of the list. I put it back into the list. And I just debated it and debated it and debated it. And I thought, no, you know what? At the time, in March, when we actually saw it, it blew us away. When it came out on Blu-ray, I bought it. And I realized one of the main criteria for my list, which was films that made such an impact that I can watch them again and again and again with no issues whatsoever. And you just sit there and go, that is just a great piece of film. Whether it is thought-provoking or whether it is just fun, but it's just a great film. You know? And so Kick-Ass does fall into that category. Yep. So it's my number five as well. Your number four, Josh.
My number four is The Social Network.
Wow, number four. Okay.
Yeah, look, I've thought long and hard about this list, and like there has been a lot of turmoil and switching places and so on and so forth. Look, The Social Network was an amazing film. It was definitely one of the highlights of the year. We went in with such high expectations for that film and just got rewarded entirely. We sung praises to the day it was released.
Damn straight.
And look, we both reviewed it very heavily. There is absolutely no problem with this film, and it's really, I wanted to put it higher on my list, but there are reasons for my other three, so I'm going to leave it at that. And
okay,
just say that, so.
That's fair enough, and I'm going to reserve comment on it because, as you know, it is further on my list. So,
okay.
My number four is How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah,
this was the surprise of the year. It was a film that came out. It's just another computer animated film. The trailer was so, and it was just thrilling. It had sensational 3D. It had amazing flying sequences. It had heartwarming characters. It was just something that I have watched now. I bought it on Blu-ray. I watched it many, many times. Mm. It never wears thin. Jay Baruchel is hysterical. Mm. It just works and on many, many levels. It is just one of those films where I sit there and go, that is just a great family entertainment film.
Yeah.
And I believe you've actually seen it now as well. So it's really good. So
I wish
really
I'd seen it at the cinema because it probably would have gone higher on my list.
I think it would have.
I didn't see it at the cinema.
But so. Little Geek, when we saw it, actually said it made his feet tingle.
Yeah.
The flying sequences were amazing. And in fact, the phrase out-avatared avatar in the flying sequences.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's my number four. Yep. Your number three.
My number three trumped. Everything is going to be the reason, apart from number one, my next two are going to be the reason that they jumped ahead of Social Network, because I said Social Network was going to be right at the top of my list. Scott Pilgrim versus the World is my number three, and it hits higher than Social Network for me because of what it accomplished. Like, be it as it may that it didn't make the money they wanted to at the cinema, it was that first time that we really managed to get everything that was geek, everything that was our generation, like right down to, you know, sort of social awkwardnesses, everything down to the manga era that is very kind of like late 90s to the sort of the modern day, which is just a part of us where we have, you know, started to sort of grab all the Sakura and all the sort of stuff and make it part the Matrix and all this sort of stuff is our generation. And to have this all represented on film and just be an absolute hilarity, you know, it tickles your funny bone. It's visually spectacular. It tackles hilarious like issues, And it just every character did their job perfectly. So, look, I mean, I just felt it was one of the films that just has
I actually loved Scott Pilgrim. And for some reason, it didn't make my list. It's one of those films where I look at it and go, there was the films that came out this year, the ones that were good, were so exceptionally good that it just kind of kept pushing it back.
Yeah.
And I think that when we got to the bottom of the pile for that number five spot, really it was between Kick-Ass and Scott Pilgrim. And I ended up going with Kick-Ass. Purely because I think as a film, I've watched it more often. Yeah. It's one of those films where I sit there and I look at Kick-Ass and I get a lot out of it.
To be fair, it's not been out on available to get.
Yeah, to be fair, I've had it a lot longer than that. But
if it was on Blu-ray...
Kick-Ass is one of those films that you can see multiple times at the cinema. Scott Pilgrim, I never felt encouraged to go to the cinema.
I definitely would have gone and watched it.
But that's a personal opinion. Yep. And I really like Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. But it just didn't make the list for me. But everybody is different. This is the thing. My number three is Toy Story 3. Because once and I said to Katie,
we can tie this together.
I'll tie this together. I think it's amazing that two animated films made my top five film this year. Yeah. Top five list this year. Toy Story 3 was an exceptional piece of animated filmmaking. It was, forget the fact that it was CG, forget the fact that it was 3D, forget the fact that it was toys. It was a touching comedy drama that tugged at the heartstrings. It was an amazing film that walked the fine line between schmaltz and touching and did it to perfection.
Look, it's one of those few things that you get as you go along sort of life that really kind of like pulls every aspect of you apart and just like rips off the external skin and you are back to that small child again. But not only from the point of view that you're watching a film which is very kind of close to the heart and sort of really talks to everyone who's ever had a single toy in their life. It sort of covers the basis. It's also a beautiful thing to just see Pixar return to where they started.
Yes.
And just really kind of like, we've done all this before, I know, but to really kind of to come back to that point and not only revisit that first time you saw Toy Story in your mind, just on screen, to see all these characters together for another time, to see the sort of passing of the torch. Like, I mean, it really does. It brings tears to the eyes. It really sort of, it really makes you really emotional. And at the same time, like, we've seen this a few times. Gamers had it with the Metal Gear Solid series, if you were a fan of that. Number four goes back to the start, where it all starts, and goes back to its original graphics, which is a really, you know, sort of like a difficult thing to do. And it's kind of like, it's the same sort of feeling. If you've had all three films, it really goes really high up on your list for the year, because it's just, you get everything that you've had before wrapped back into a package, redistributed to you, and then finished as a perfect threesome. Like, if they leave it at three films, it's just
untouchable. God, I hope they do. God, I hope they do.
Exactly, but it's untouchable now, in my opinion. It is one of those perfect trilogies of films where it's just, there's nothing wrong with
it. I want to buy the Blu-ray that's got the three films in
it. Exactly.
I really want to buy that set. Yeah. We've got people in our chat room who are basically saying it was a pleasant surprise, since third parts of, he says threequels, he meant to say trilogies. Joe the Giraffe, thank you very much, says they tend to be crap, and he's right. Yep, thirds usually do.
Yep.
Also, Joe the Giraffe would like to say the bit where Scott Pilgrim jumped out of the window in that film made him laugh so hard the Fanta came out of his nose.
Exactly.
So, all right, so that was your number three as well, right?
Number two.
So I'm to your number two. My number two is Inception.
Yeah.
I think this was probably the word that is often used and not used right, I think is used right here. It is probably the most groundbreaking film we have seen all year. I think it is intelligent. It is thought-provoking. It was an amazing effort. And it's also an amazing effort that the studio took the resources it would take to make the film, over $150 million, to actually give it to a film that was completely unknown.
Yeah.
And it was an amazing ride.
Yeah.
It really was. Great performances from everyone. Love the visuals. Love the concept. Never bored once in that film.
Look, we will go out and look, it's my number one. And the reason it is my number one is, like, I mean, you said it yourself with the fact that they took a big leap on this film.
The leap of faith. Absolutely.
But just to, like you say, you can't get bored of this film. I've seen it five times now, and it's just every aspect of the film just has a coating of just love on it. And it's like we were talking about with Tron. It's like you can feel every sweat, blood drip from every scene, because it's just there is nothing left out, and there's so little. Like, you don't see fan forums where people are like, this doesn't make sense or something like that, because it's completely subjective. And films that really do that and can just pull it off so cleanly and sort of just leave that question in your mind at the end of the film, was it real, was it not, sort of to build that kind of a feeling at the end of the film, and to have that your entire reason for the film, like basically that was what you were leading to the entire time, is just a perfect circle. And it's just, to me, it's untouchable. I've just watched it 4 or 5 times. I've never got bored. I've never seen something that I don't agree with. I've never seen something that breaks me out or goes, hold on, that doesn't make sense. It's just damn near perfect. And, you know,
I encourage everyone to see it.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it yet, you've just missed the film of the year, in my opinion. So go out and sort of just deal with the fact that you may not agree with some of the ways that they're done, or maybe it's a little bit convoluted and you don't like particular aspects of how they did the storytelling. You've got to respect it for what it tried to do. It's a hell of a ride, and it's a hell of a story to try and cram in, and to get 3 layers on a film and still the average person to be able to 100% understand what happened.
Yeah. And to actually have a film that has, slight spoilers, an ambiguous ending, yet not frustrate anyone.
Exactly.
Everybody has an opinion as to what that ending means.
Yeah, and that's good enough for me. Yeah.
Damn straight. All right, so that's your number one, my number two, and we'll finish it off with my number one, which is, of course, The Social Network.
Yeah.
Now, for me, this was the film of the year. I think let me just state very clearly that Inception and Social Network were like...
Yeah.
juggling backwards and forwards on my list the entire time, because I was trying to figure out which one spoke to me the most.
Yeah.
And as much as I like Inception, I think The Social Network was almost a near perfect film.
Mm.
It was one of those films where you sit there and go, yes, they juggled with history and so forth, but as a film alone, it was an exceptional piece of filmmaking.
I know.
Exceptional piece of acting from everyone in that cast. Armie Hammer playing 2 roles. The visual effects were absolutely
great,
invisible.
Yeah.
Great soundtrack. You just sit there and it spoke to the geek inside me. Mm. I sat there looking at it going, and yes, the characters are sexist. Yes, I mean, These are all aspects we know, but this is part of the aspect of the characters that they're portraying. And you sit there and go, it is an amazing story about a person who I don't like very much, but an amazing person for what he achieved, and an amazing controversy that was raised. You know, and it is a zeitgeist of what is going on in the world right now. And, you know, quite frankly, I think the film is probably going to win the Golden Globe and the Oscar as well. So
exactly. Look, I mean, when I put it so low, I mean, it hurts so much.
Well, top 5 is still pretty
exactly good. Like, the only reason that it hit 4 is, like, to me, I sat there and I went, look, I respect it, and it's a piece of its time, and it's a beautiful piece of filmmaking. But to me, the only reason that Scott went higher in my books is that I can see this being that film that everyone will have in their collection in 20 years' time.
They won't have Social Network.
Exactly.
I understand that completely. No, I understand your choice in Scott.
Yeah.
I think Scott Pilgrim has the potential, and it's already showing that potential, that it will be this year's cult phenomenon.
Exactly.
And even though it failed at the box office, it will be like Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead and be in everybody's video collection going down the track. So I understand that completely.
Yeah.
I just think Social Network, for a film that we didn't know what it was going to be throughout the entire production of this film, to then go see it and just go, oh my God, they nailed it.
Yeah.
You know, they completely nailed it. And Fincher nailed it. And the script, I think, is quite possibly the finest script of the year.
I will definitely agree.
Aaron Sorkin's words are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just amazing to listen to. And I'm a big fan of good writing. So so anyway, that's our list. We do have some honorary mentions. We also have some bad films.
Yeah. Which should we start with, man?
Well, let's just do the bad films really quickly. We won't do them one-on-one. We'll just run through them really quickly.
Cool.
What were some of your highlights of the crap of this year, Josh?
Okay, cool. My list is a bit different. When I say it's the films for me, because everyone does the worst list, but for me it's the films that just failed me personally. Like, I went in with neutral expectations. So I'm not talking about films where I went in and went, this is going to suck films that I went in and went, what's this going to do? And to just completely bomb in my eyes is how my list goes. So number one is, well, number three is Nightmare on Elm Street. I went in neutral. I went, look, this could go either way. They could either finally get it right. We saw those trailers. They had moments that really kind of like sat, you know, right.
They had him.
And they had, yeah, they had Jackie Earle Haley. Yeah. And it was just like, to just be such a shit film was just such a waste of resources and a waste of time. And it was just, it to me really sort of sunk home. Number two is actually The Girl Who Played with Fire. I
didn't think of that.
Yeah, I actually was really jazzed to see that one. We both really enjoyed the first one. We really wanted to see where they were going to go with it. And to just have such a waste of 2 hours of my life just to be a complete nonsensical piece of trash, to have basically no ending, to have the character...
Trailers are up for part three now.
Exactly. To have the characters, though, just completely change.
Yeah.
Like, they kind of... No one felt like they were in the first films. And, yeah, so it just fell through for me.
Agreed.
And just a complete waste. And, of course, my last one is The Last Airbender.
Okay. Yes. Well,
and we'll leave it at that.
We'll come back to that. I've got Alice in Wonderland.
Which I wasn't willing to put on there because I refused to talk about that.
Now,
film.
Alice in Wonderland, I think, goes down as one of the major disappointments of the year.
Yep.
A Nightmare on Elm Street I had on my list as well, for all the reasons you've already said. Night and Day.
Yeah, could have been good. Could have been the relaunch of a career.
Big budget. No. Could have been the great Cary Grant romantic, you know, adventure film, To Catch a Thief type stuff. Failed in every way. Marmaduke was just another example of
you
why.
You saw it?
No, I didn't need to. What I'm saying is it was one of those examples of a film where you go, that is starting. It is putting the writing on the wall for things to come.
Yeah.
Because now we have Yogi Bear, the Smurfs, and Gulliver's Travels coming. And you sit there and go, this is all that same. Same. Cookie cutter. And do you know where it all stems from? It all stems from 2 years ago with Alvin and the Chipmunks. And I just sit there and go, stop it. Stop. Yeah. and my number one bad film of the year was The Last Airbender, which goes down as probably the most disappointing film of quite possibly the last 5 years, actually. Because they had perfect source material. And they completely fucked it up.
Exactly. And if anybody wants to hear more about that, read the wonderful review I put up on geekactually.com.
Absolutely.
Because I'm done talking that
movie. It's over. Now, we do have some honorary mentions. Mm-hmm. And as I say, my honorary mentions are purely because of release date.
Okay. Mine aren't honorary mentions. They're must-watches. Ones that didn't hit my list, but if you don't see these films, these are the ones that were just perfect.
Actually, the same thing. You must see these films. The only reason they're not on my list is because of their release date. We got them in 2010, but they were actually 2009.
Mine are actually from this year. It's just ones that I just feel don't hit the top five.
Fair enough. Yeah. Let's just run through them quick. What do you got?
You want my five?
Yeah.
All right, cool. We've got The American, which we talked about and reviewed on the show. I thought that, you know, this film got reviewed strangely. It's not an action film. Go into it thinking you're getting a slow burn and you'll love it.
Can I tell you that I juggled in and out of my five spot with Kick-Ass?
I know. I had it on my list at one stage. The Road, it's a fantastic film. It's bleak. It's painful to watch, but it is...
It may only be a one-watch film.
It may be a one-watch film, but it is a one-watch you will never forget. Number three on my list is Red. Surprised the crap out of me. Did not see it being decent or even good. I put this in the same category as Losers and loved every moment. Number two is Iron Man 2. Look, I mean, it was a fantastic film. It just kept getting knocked down. Like you said, it's one of those films where it was like...
I felt it was never quite top five material.
I never expected it. It was the best at its time. And sort of as we got more and more through the year, it just dropped off my list entirely. And number one is Four Lions.
Yes.
Which I just adored as a film. It's funny. It makes you think. It's bleak. It will raise emotions in you. It will make you feel very uncomfortable, but it is just fantastic.
Absolutely. And I've got Harry Brown, which came out early in this year, but of course is a 2009 film in England. Must-see film.
Absolutely. Gotta have it.
The Hurt Locker, which is actually a well and truly 2009 film. Won the Oscar for 2009, but we didn't get it till March in this country. I've got In the Loop, which came out in 2009 in the States. In England. Loved In the Loop. Great political satire. Once again, just outside of our year. I had Four Lions as well, and of course The American. But The American I have, not because of the date, The American I have got to mention as well, because I loved it, and it literally juggled in and out of my top five list. Almost there, and then just didn't quite make it. Yeah. So, and that may amend later on. But let's face it, this list and our top five list are not quite finished.
Yeah.
Because we have one more release day before the end of this year, which is Boxing Day. And there's some stuff coming out Boxing Day. And I hate to say it, but True Grit is actually supposed to come out Christmas Day in America. Yeah. We don't get it till January.
Yeah.
So it could very possibly be one of the films of the year. Who knows? We're not going to see it until next year.
Well, we will review it in next week's category, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think it'll have to fall there because of the release date. But True Grit, I'm really looking forward to. And that'll actually be our second review back. I think it's the 20th of January is coming out. So we'll be able to do that. That's it, guys. That's it for this year. Thank you very much for joining us over all this year of podcasting. It's been a great time. It's been a great ride. We will be back, as I said at the head of the show, January 8th. Is when we return. We will be returning. I'm not sure what film we're returning back with. Now, we actually did say, we did tease last week that we could possibly have a guest on this week. It did fall through, but she has actually contacted me. We're going to try and tee her up for early January. So we'll try and get her in. And I'm not saying who it is, guys, so you're going to have to wait. I'm just going to say agree or disagree with anything that we have to say or our views, or you've got something else you want to submit to us, send it to feedback@geekactually.com. Drop us a voicemail, Sydney number 02-801-13167. Just because we're not doing podcasts for 2 weeks doesn't mean we're not living on the site. All right, we'll still be doing stuff on the site. We here at Film actually want to wish you all a very Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays for those who don't celebrate. And just for you guys, I've got one of these. There we go. Merry Christmas, guys. And
the politically correct one. All right.
So you can have one of those. For the audio listeners, that's Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays coming up on screen. We want you to have a really, really great and safe new year. Please. All survive and come back to us. January 8th, 2011, we'll mark our first show back. Remember, next year, it's only going to be two shows. It'll be Film Actually and then followed by Geek Actually, which is the combined after show tech show. If you want to get merchandise, join our fan page, join us on Twitter, do anything like that. You can find everything about us at geekactually.com. Just go there and you'll find links to everything. And for all those people who are missing tech already, just remember your tech will be rolled into Geek Actually. Okay, into the other show. We've got to throw out a couple of shout outs to friends who have supported us and we have supported
throughout the year. And Merry Christmas to all these people as well, of course.
Sorry? And a Merry Christmas to all of these people, which are moviefanhouse.com or /reboundradio.com. They're the same people. For the Movie Fancast, right this instant, Talking Deadcast. Jesse, Charlie, Brad, Merry Christmas.
We love you guys. And all the best to Brad. We hope you're feeling better.
Absolutely. And don't miss the last episode of the Talking Deadcast because Josh and I are there.
Yep.
Okay. Bernie, Greg, Fox, Company, all of you. I know I've missed a few of your names. You know I mean all of you over at The Real Junkies Podcast, weekendronan.com. Dudes, Merry Christmas to you guys as well.
Keep on drinking.
Keep on drinking. Keep that tequila up. Have a drink for us, please, these holidays. And Josh, I believe you've got one.
Yep, rawdlc.com. We are on holidays at the moment as well. You'll see a few news things flick up before the start of the year, but we're on a three-week break because we want a nice, fresh start to the year. But go on, check it out. There's all sorts of reviews, and Dave himself has also chucked up a Tron review as well. So go check that out.
Fantastic. Actually, I read that the other day, so it's good. Yeah. Now, we also have one last shout-out. This is somebody who we've never shouted out before to.
If you count Josh.
Oh, no, no, no. Oh, yeah, yeah. Josh is afterwards, but we always kind of throw him at the end. All right, let's do Josh first. Josh, Josh Spencer, all of our cartoon artwork, all of our cover art and so forth is done by Josh Spencer. Find him over at attackninja.blogspot.com. Merry Christmas to you too, dude.
Yep.
All right? I didn't mean to leave you out. You were actually next on the list. But the one that we've never shouted at before. Now, I actually went and listened to the last episode to try and hear it, and she never actually introduced herself, so I'm not sure. Is it Rachel or Rochelle? I'm going to say it's Rochelle, and I'm going to say Merry Christmas to you guys, and keep up the good work, and thank you for your support of us over at the Funky Film Show on Radio Fremantle, 107.9 FM. And if you don't live in Fremantle and would like to listen to the Funky Film Show, you can also go to radiofremantle.com. They have their archives up for web listens, so you can listen to them as well. And that's it. I think we're done.
Yeah.
You got anything else you want to plug?
No, I'm good, man.
You're good?
Actually, no.
Oh.
Dude. Of course, we have to say it will not be up until the start of next week, but the first issue of magazine project we have been working on called Arbiter Magazine, which for people that don't know, was actually my co-editor's decision, which actually means people who have the ability or religious aspect to change the will of people around them, which is obviously a very boastful thing to say. But look, it's a 7-page PDF style magazine, which will be going out for people that use tablets, people that want to use phones. I assume you could do that as well. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, people that want to read it on a computer.
Any PDF reader.
Basically, it's just going to be a once a month magazine that will just cover sort of a nice big review. It'll have an opinion section. We talk about art and geeky things. If people want to get it, it will be distributed through Geek Actually off the Straight website. It is part of a new program we are trying just to see whether people are really interested in this kind of thing or whether we should just stick to writing on the site.
It'll be out this week, yeah?
It will be out this week.
Yeah. So, yeah, go to geekactually.com. Or remember, if you follow us on Twitter or go to our Facebook fan page, all information also comes through there as well. So if you want to keep up to date with what we're doing, that's best places to be.
Absolutely.
Okay? So yeah, look for that sometime this week. We haven't quite figured out whether it's going to be an email newsletter or whether it's going to be on its own RSS feed. Yep. So we're still trying to figure that part out, but it will be out this week.
And please, guys, we need as many people, once you've downloaded it, tell your friends, get them to download it. We need a push so that we can sort of see what sort of numbers we're going to be dragging on this.
And see whether it's worthwhile. So we want to make sure it is. So yeah, do stick with that. Great. I've almost forgot all about that.
Yes. Good thing I didn't.
All right. So we're going to get out of here. This will be the last time we do this because, of course, the film has now finally come out. But for the last 3 weeks, we've been playing tracks from Tron. Mm-hmm. This week, we will also go out with a track from Tron. This is the end credits, actually, the end titles from Tron Legacy. Which is kind of symbolic, last one of the film, you know.
I got it.
So we're going to go out with the end title music from Tron. I'm going to say, in the meantime, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And go see lots of movies over the holidays, guys, because it's holidays, and when we come back, we're all going to be talking about movies. So we will see you all January 8th. Mm. All right, bye now.